Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Do you remember the year 2012 in September? That's when amateur hour first began. Just two friends talking about the Chiefs. The team was awful. A lot's changed since 11 years ago. Now we have Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. And oh yeah, we won a Super Bowl.
You're welcome.
It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour to start. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, oh yeah.
Wow. Let's go!
Yeah! That's right, folks.
Yeah!
The show is called Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. And joining me today, our West Coast ambassador for the Kansas City Chiefs, straight from Hermosa Beach, California, weighing in at whatever he weighs.
Come
and
on.
Looking sharp, as always.
Come on, give me a weight.
His darkness.
72 kilograms, by the way, or 74 kilograms. Damn, I just weighed myself. I forgot. Konnichi-san!
You got a little high, and I assume like mellowed you out.
Oh.
Too loud. Zoom mic.
I need to mellow out.
Was that a really high-pitched sup?
It was a Konnichi sup.
Oh, Konnichi-san. Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, crosstown reference for you.
Well, so obviously it's been a few weeks since we've talked. The Chiefs continue to win football games, which is great. I guess I just after seeing Chiefs Chargers play out all like as close to exactly as you could expect 2 years in a row. Let's just say that game looked pretty familiar. Maybe a little more familiar to you since you were in the stadium, seemingly quite drunk, right?
I would say more delirious than drunk. Little drunk, more delirious. No idea what time it is. No idea what's going on around my life.
You're still jet lagged pretty hard.
Just falling asleep at random hours of the day for 5 hours at a time and waking up. Like, what's happening? That's pretty much been my life the last.
What day is this?
Yeah, at all times. But I did make it to a football game and was able to cheer my ass off.
That's awesome. I think we just have to talk about, you know, the three pillars of this pretty incredible offense that the Chiefs are.
Hold on. Before we get there, you touched on it. Sorry. I should have taken my cue there. But Chiefs Chargers, you talked about how these games are the same. Let's look at these freaking games because they all do feel the exact same. The Justin Herbert versus Patrick Mahomes rivalry going back to 2020 game one. Chargers by 3 with 2:27 left. Mahomes game tying field goal drive, game winning field goal drive in overtime. Okay. Second game that year, Mahomes did not play. 2021, first game. Chargers up 21-17. Mahomes. Fourth quarter touchdown drive, only to have everything come undone with a late, bogus pass interference call. I'm sure you guys all remember that. I was quite upset. The Chargers actually won that one. Game number two of 2021. This was in SoFi last year. Chargers up 21-13. Mahomes TD drive in the fourth quarter, two-point conversion. Chargers touchdown, go up 28-21 with 2:19. Mahomes takes him down, scores a touchdown, then goes to overtime. Mahomes goes down, scores a touchdown in overtime to win it. 2022 game one, Chargers up 17-14 going into the fourth quarter. Mahomes field goal drive. Chiefs actually use a pick six to win this. Let's be honest, the Chargers probably should have scored there and Mahomes should have scored at the end. It would have been a lot more fun, but I guess the pick six was okay. Mahomes did lead a field goal drive to ice the game, so okay. And then two nights ago, Chargers up 27-23 with a minute 46 left. Goddamn, wouldn't you believe it? Mahomes went on a fucking game-winning touchdown drive again. I can't imagine being a Chargers fan playing against this guy. And everybody talks about how well the Chargers play the Chiefs, and they're absolutely not wrong because they do play us tough every single time. And they have a fourth quarter lead every single time. And then Patrick Mahomes wins the fucking game every single time. It's unbelievable. I mean, any other fan base should hate going against Patrick Mahomes, except maybe the Bengals fans. They probably enjoy it a little bit. But especially AFC West teams, but especially the Chargers. Nobody hates Mahomes like the Chargers fan out there. The fan.
I look at having the game play out almost, I mean, it was so similar to 2021. I believe it was 14-13 Chargers going into the fourth quarter. And at the end of overtime, it was 34-28 Chiefs. And then two nights ago, 20-16 Chargers going into the fourth quarter. Chiefs win 30-27. Explosive fourth quarters in both games, with the Chiefs coming out on top. And ultimately in both games, Travis Kelce essentially walking them off. I mean, look, I don't. What more can
you say? On the same play, mind you. On the same play.
Yeah.
Granted, it's not that complicated of a play. It's just a Kelce little 5-yard inside drag. But on the same play, Kelce scores the game-winning touchdowns in LA.
What more can you say about Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce? What more can you ask for? All three of them are Hall of Famers. All three of them are in the conversation, or certainly will be when they're done, for best ever at their positions. I mean, look, I've gotten to this point. I've got a woman in my life, and she is not necessarily like a huge football fan. She's like, you know, I'll watch the Chiefs, whatever, but like, I don't really care that much.
Not a great start, but all right.
And I have these conversations with her about Patrick Mahomes. Like, I'm trying to prove to someone that doesn't care about how important he was. And I mean, I'm telling you, it's to the point now where we're in the car today. We're going to Costco. And I'm talking to her about how Patrick Mahomes has impacted this city. Because as we were driving along 71, heading north, we see this little park off the side of the highway, and she's like, yeah, I think the Mahomes Foundation did that. I play tennis right there. And I'm like, oh, you know, Pat Mahomes, he's probably the most important citizen of this town. Like, I think he is. I think he's the most important resident of Kansas City. And she's like, oh my God, I can't with you. I'm just talking about like how he's made the city so attractive. The new airport is being built because of the draft and because of the World Cup. And most of that is coming because of Patrick Mahomes. Like, people want to move to Kansas City because of these things that Kansas City is doing. And most of it has to do with Patrick Mahomes.
He's I heard Mahomes invented
faces in sports, and he's ours. This is the golden era of Kansas City Chiefs football. And like, I've reached a point where I am so filled with joy and hope and elation and all of these things all at once because of that, those three guys. I don't even know what to say about them anymore, other than just, I love you. Thanks. Stick around as long as you can.
Man, I'm so glad that we're getting our thankfuls out of the way early on the pod this year, and we don't have to save it for the end and I have to come up with some BS. But so we're getting them out now. We're all thankful for Pat Mahomes. I heard he invented the cut of meat called the burnt end. Oh. Like Kansas City, they didn't know what that was until Patrick Mahomes came to town, and now it's taken the city by storm. I hear the bird dance huge out there.
They're a pretty big deal. Yeah. I mean, he owns a piece of all of the franchises that are in town. You know, I just I love him so much. And
he's,
you know,
he's physically building that downtown Royal Stadium, I heard.
Yeah, right. With his own out there. Two hands.
On his off days, digging dirt. Getting started on that.
You know, I wonder. We entered this season. Let me ask you this. We entered this season knowing that we're kind of getting to a point where we think that like Travis Kelce's gonna maybe take a little dip. Maybe take a little dip. I mean, I believe he's currently on pace to break all of the like volume stat records for his position. Catches, yards, touchdowns.
Like this season, you mean?
Yeah. And like
touchdowns, he has to be.
He has his career high in touchdowns. He's tied it through 10 games. I mean, he has 11 touchdowns in 10 games. I loved that the Chiefs said something about Thanksgiving coming early. That's a turkey for Travis. I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
Three touchdowns, a turkey. Good for you guys, Chiefs. They're a bowling-friendly podcast. But I
best bowling podcast there is in all of Kansas City.
I don't think that I anticipated Travis Kelce to be as dominant as he's been this year. I am admittedly, I don't know if it's, you know, whatever. I'm surprised, I'll say, that he still looks the way that he does. I'm kind of like expecting him to slow down a little bit. And my God, he looks fresher than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I thought last year he had maybe taken a step down from 2020. And now looking at the stats, I mean, he did kind of across the board, 13 less catches, 300 fewer yards, and two fewer touchdowns in 2021 compared to 2020, mm-hmm. which seemed like his absolute peak. 105 catches, 1,416 yards, and 11 touchdowns that season in only 15 games. So, I mean, that's the absolute peak of Travis Kelce, although he might blow it away this year statistically. It's just, I mean, he's 33 fucking years old. He's 33. I mean, that's Julio Jones isn't much older than 33. A.J. Green isn't much older than 33. I don't know how old this guy is, 34, 35 maybe, but the point is they're Hall of Fame players that have slowed way down, and yet Travis Kelce is still maybe climbing up or maybe still at the tail end of his absolute peak. It's incredible. It's incredible. And his durability. I mean, doesn't miss games after missing a whole season, his rookie year, and starting 25. Like, he's going to break all these career records. He didn't start putting up NFL stats until he was 25, which is, you know, a good 2-3 years behind when most players get going in the NFL. Like, I bet Gronkowski started at like 22 or something. He's another guy. Look at Gronkowski, how he's worn down. You know, you talk about how he's a much better blocker and whatever, and that leads to it. I mean, blocking is what wears down your body. Travis Kelce is, you know, more of a receiver out there that can, his body's able to last like that. And it's going to add up. Like, I mean, this keeps going. I mean, he's already entering the best tight end discussion of all time. I think he's about to pass Shannon Sharpe for fourth most yards all time from a tight end. He's like 100 yards away. So he's about to pass him. And then he has Tony G and Witten. And there's another guy. It's not Gronkowski because he just passed him. Winslow, maybe?
You know who it is.
You know who it is.
I mean, I'm not like...
Oh, yeah, I know the person.
I was going to say, I thought you were forgetting, and I'm like, please tell me that you're joking. Like, you know who it is.
Wait, who is it?
It's Tony.
No, I said Tony. Tony and Witten, and then there's someone's at number three.
Oh, yeah. It's like probably Winslow or...
It might be Winslow.
Allworth or somebody.
Allworth receiver. Regardless, these three... The best. They used to be the four horsemen, and then we lost Tyreek, and now we're just down to these three. I hope we don't have to make any more sacrifices here. I'm going to keep these three together for quite a bit longer. But yes, I mean, what the hell else can you say about these three? It's just an amazing sight.
I don't know if I've shared this before. If I have, forgive me. Welcome to Amateur Hour. Within the past maybe month or so, and for the first time this season, I've been listening to on Mondays the ESPN Daily podcast, because Alex Smith is on there as an NFL analyst. And it's just about 30 minutes with him and Pablo Torre. And so, like, pretty smart conversation, two really sharp guys. And it's been really cool to hear Alex talk about the Chiefs. And one of the things that he said is, like, you know, when Travis first started playing, I would go and watch tape after the game and have, you know, somebody like Matt Nagy telling me, like, hey, Travis is open on this one. Travis is open on this one. Travis is open on this one. And because he, you know, second year player, but hasn't really played on the team, Alex is like not necessarily looking in his direction. And he's like, it got to a point where it looked like Kelce was open on every single play. And he talked about how obviously what Travis and Pat have been able to develop in terms of understanding what they're going to do, their ability to freelance and work together. He's like, they have peaked more than Alex was able to with Travis, because he said, I would think about it and like Kelce would go to this open space, but it wasn't necessarily what the route called. And I'm like, you can't do that, man. Like, I need you to be in a specific area or whatever.
He's too much of a robot. I mean, remember Alex Smith playing quarterback is just too much of a robot. Mahomes is much more freestyle.
Well, but he was essentially admitting that. And he's like, it took me a long time to kind of adjust to it, but coaches were showing me every single game. It's like, well, but look where he is. Like, he's open. He's getting open all the time. And to see this guy still doing that, and I mean, honestly, in some cases, better than ever, because what's really starting to impress me, especially over the, if you just think about like these last two Chiefs at Chargers games, Travis Kelce with the ball in his hands, the angles that he's taking in order to end up getting into the end zone, and the speed that he's showing to be able to finish some of these plays at his size, at his age, you have to presume in some way, shape, or form diminishing speed and athleticism at least a little bit, just like a natural order of things. But like I've now heard Alex Smith say, like, that guy can run the little tight end route that he does until he's 45. It doesn't matter how fast he is or whatever. Like, he can just play as long as he wants to and continue getting open. He's just such a remarkable player. And we've talked about it before, that the journey that he's taken, and the way that he cares about his legacy with the team, his leadership skills, the way that he's matured in front of our eyes, we've watched him grow up. He's just one of the all-time greats, man. And getting to see him have these amazing years as he's embraced that leadership role, it's like you're really starting to do all the right things, and look at how everything is falling in place for you too. It's just an awesome thing to be able to watch. And you know, we look at Mahomes and it's like every week he's doing something different, something new, crazy stat that comes up. I mean, some of the things that people were talking about after this game, he's won 25 straight in November and December. He's never lost on the road, 14-0 in the AFC West on the road. I think there's probably three or four or five other just mind-blowing stats. And
the comeback stats with him entering the fourth quarter from behind and being down two scores, and it's just like he's at like a 60% win percentage on those, and everybody else is like at 40 or like just below 40. Like everybody else. So he's 20% ahead of every other NFL quarterback in their career.
I mean, and we can talk about it in terms of this season and say, well, he's now like, and I think heavy favorite to be the MVP. You know, the Chiefs are on a roll. They've got a couple potentially tricky games down the stretch. But I believe
they have the easiest remaining schedule.
I think it's second lowest. It might be easiest among playoff teams. It's like the second best for the Chiefs strength of schedule. And so, I mean, I just, but we are at a point now where watching these three every single week, it's rare and it's really special. And yeah, I'm thankful for it.
A whole pod of thankfuls. Whole pod. Yeah, we are kind of at a point where, you know, don't you kind of just wish we could stop the NFL season right now? I mean, the Chiefs are the clear-cut best team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Eagles have a fewer loss, I guess, but I promise if you look at every single power rankings from this week, the Chiefs will be number one. The Bills are fading. The Eagles have been fading. The Vikings are fading. Patrick Mahomes, the unquestioned MVP. I mean, nobody's ever even in the conversation with him right now. Somebody will get in the conversation with him because Mahomes will have an average game and they'll just need to talk about it with someone. But right now, it's not even, I mean, with that final drive, he was already leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else and then puts that final drive on top of it. He's just absolutely in a class of his own MVP-wise right now.
Yeah.
Andy, I think you can make a strong argument that he's the coach of the year. If he could ever get some doggone respect when it comes to that, I think he only has one in his career. So I don't think he would win it, but he would at least be in the conversation. And I think you could argue he should win it. Chris Jones, you could even argue is up for defensive player of the year right now. I don't think he would win it either, but you'd probably say top five, top three.
Mina Kimes said that she thinks it's him and Parsons coming down the stretch. That's what she expects.
Interesting.
Is that it's a two horse race essentially between those guys.
Awesome. So, I mean, the only problem is that we know that these things don't last. I mean, ask the 2020 Chiefs. At this point in 2020, we were kicking the Buccaneers' ass. We had only lost one game. And, you know, obviously we went to the Super Bowl that season, and it's not like we fell apart or anything, but we didn't win it, and we got crushed in the Super Bowl. Ask the Bills in October, because they were in a similar spot that we are now. They had just beat the Chiefs. They were the unquestioned best team in the NFL. They had the unquestioned MVP. And look where they are 1 month later. And go back to 2019. At this exact time in 2019, the Chiefs were coming off a bad loss to the Titans and a dreadful win over the Chargers, limping along to 7-4, and they go on to win the Super Bowl that season. So I'm just saying all that you know, we're in like a perfect spot right now. But the NFL just doesn't stop right now. Like, we're number one in the AP NFL football poll, but there's still a long ways to go this season and a lot of work left to do for the Chiefs.
So if you're thinking specifically in terms of the work yet to do, where do you think that the Chiefs need to, let's say, shore some things up, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, since that's what we've been talking about? They're the number one offense in the league. But I think that there are still ways that, or things that they need to address, conversations that, you know, probably need to be had. Where do you think that they need to get better?
If you got something, fire it off.
Well, so at the very least, I will say things are changing right now. They are in the process of evolving as an offense. You know, there's still only 10 games removed from Tyreek Hill, right? And we see this past week that Sky Moore, when seemingly I think he's just asked to be a wide receiver, and is, you know, getting snaps, that he can perform. Sky Moore, best game as a Chief, best game as a professional. I believe that it's five catches and I think four for first downs and three were on third down. I mean, Sky Moore, I think, did pretty much exactly what you were hoping for, and nothing about it. Like, they didn't even give him the manufactured touches.
Yeah, it's different than like what Kadarius Toney was doing, whereas that was kind of like some reverses and then like a swing pass where he happens to be wide open and then like just like a go route down the sideline. Where it's all just kind of like specific stuff for him This was Sky Moore doing it inside the offense.
Yeah.
And Tony doing it so quick, it was kind of a bad look, especially with that big game he had against Jacksonville. And it's just like, man, where the hell is Sky Moore if he's already doing this? But it was all like, let's get the ball in his hand and see what he can do. And he can definitely do some things, even though we're kind of seeing maybe the bad side of Kadarius Toney now with the hamstring already popping back up. So we've got the good and the bad already within the 2-3 games that we've had him. But, I mean, the big question about after that is, if he's doing this, where the hell is Sky Moore? And I think they're just kind of bringing him along differently to operate as a true receiver within the offense. And Sky Moore, I still feel like he might be their best receiver. Give me a 3rd and 6, the best receiver against man coverage that they got, you know, not Travis Kelce. When the defense is keying on him, who's the receiver that's going to step up and win a one-on-one matchup? I still think Sky Moore is going to be their best option at receiver like that. Like, I love Juju, and I think he's good, and he does his thing, and he's great at yak, and I think he's brings a lot. But I don't know if I trust him to get open necessarily on a 3rd and 6. Like on that slant, sure, but I don't think he can get the separation that Sky Moore can. So I think Sky Moore still plays an important part, and I think bringing him along is very important so that he can be up to speed and have his confidence back up by the time they get in the playoffs.
Well, and I think one thing that you'll see, particularly coming off of that performance from him, I mean, one of those 3rd down conversions, I believe was 3rd and 7, he just dusted Derwin James in order to get to the spot where he caught that pass and kept the drive moving. And Derwin is not a corner. He plays a bunch of different positions. And ultimately, I think that Derwin is a much better matchup on somebody like Travis Kelce than a smaller, shiftier guy like Sky Moore. But you saw in that situation the way that Sky is able to, through those, I guess, what we're calling releases, his ability to get open early in the route so that he can then create more separation as he runs away from people. I mean, it's beautiful. And I think that he is a useful player that when they have all these guys, it's almost like, you know, we've been teaching Sky the offense. We want you to, when you're out there, you may not necessarily be a focal point, but like, you're going to see how the offense operates. You're going to see the timing of things and where you're supposed to be and try to build rhythm and all that stuff. And Kadarius Toney, like you said, it's been, we are going to put the ball in your hands. And that's where I've been a little bit worried or frustrated as far as Sky is concerned, is like, I guess you are bringing him along slowly. And maybe the plan all along was like, look, we know if Juju pops, we're probably not going to be able to keep him. And so we can just slowly teach Sky. And he is a year two, you're a starter. You know, and if we get stuff from this year, so be it. But I have found it so strange that in training camp and some of the preseason stuff, I mean, he's in the backfield. They're giving him handoffs. They're moving him all around. And
it was a lot of that
manufactured touch type of stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, I know that McColl has been in that role. And I know that when you bring in Toney, you want to give him some of that stuff, especially while McColl is hurt. But I just don't understand why they haven't even tried it since the regular season started. It's felt like, is he done something wrong? Is it, you know, they're asking him to shoulder this load on special teams? And look, I've never really been somebody to take a jab at Uncle Dave, but dude, the Sky Moore punt returning thing, and he won't drop it. Every time they ask him, he's like, well, you know, we certainly aren't giving up on Sky there. And it's like, I don't think everyone else has given up. Sky's given up on it. Like, can we just...
Hey, he caught those. He caught those punts. He caught them. But McColl's hurt. McColl's hurt and Toney's hurt. I don't know who else they got. I mean, I think they put Watson back for maybe 1 or 2 returns, like in that game when Sky had a fumble. They're down their other guys. So I don't know what you're supposed to do there. I think this will end up being a blessing, the injuries that happened to Juju and McColl and even Toney, because it forced them to throw Sky in there. And honestly, I don't know if they ever would have if they didn't get hurt. Like, if they had a full receiving core, I just don't know if Sky ever sees the field this year. And I think it's important that he does. So I think it's a very good thing. Like, I'm let's sit Juju another game. Like, let's continue developing this guy because I think we'll need him in the playoffs.
I mean, the way that Juju got hit and the way that he had the arm thing.
After arms or whatever it is.
I mean, like that to me, I just don't see any reason to rush him back. I don't. I do not see a reason to rush him back.
Cole went on IR, so that's 4 games, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And it's not like it wasn't like a retroactive, like he just missed his first of 4. So he definitely has to miss Rams, Raiders, Broncos, I believe, are the next 3.
And who knows with Tony with this hamstring, because I mean he's been out most of the year with a hamstring, which maybe we all thought was bogus, but now it's hurt again. And not to mention he missed games last year. I'm not sure what the injury was last year, but the dude's a little injury prone. So who knows how long this? I don't know if it's been said it's serious or whatever this week, but who knows when that happens? And maybe the Chiefs won't even be upfront about it because they've hidden hamstring injuries for weeks upon weeks upon weeks before. So who knows when he's going to come back?
Well, and it, you know, the running back position is evolving too. Pacheco finally kind of, I mean, he's looking like a starter, but guys, we got to keep in mind, he played 40% of the snaps against the Chargers. I believe that he was on the field for 10 plays that they didn't hand him the ball. I think it was 27 plays and 17 of them were carries. And look, he had 100 yards and he looked fantastic. He looked more patient than he ever has. He looked more like a running back than he ever has. Looking fantastic. But McKinnon still played more snaps than he did.
You saw the reason why, because Pacheco, when he was pass blocking, just got destroyed. Like,
I only saw the one, but that was pro Derwin James. And the joke that I kept trying to make was that, like, all right, how many like grown man's job jokes is he going to hear in film study this week when they see Derwin James is the one that's coming around the corner? Because he got absolutely manhandled, tossed aside like it wasn't anything.
And you'd probably see more of those if he was playing more snaps and in these shotgun roles like that Jarrett McKinnon, where they clearly trust him as the third down running back and as the pass blocking running back.
They're calling him like a sixth offensive lineman, the way that McKinnon is as a pass blocker, and he's
disrespectful. Not disrespectful.
I mean, he's exceptional.
You know, I think this is the biggest development since we've been off for this month, is they kicked Clyde to the curb. And he did get a couple carries in this game, so maybe that wasn't the long-term plan, but I think it should be. It's time for Clyde to be put on ice because Pacheco is leaps and bounds better. He's just better. But it's tough to say because even against Tennessee, so Pacheco gets 5 carries for 5 yards. So it's not a great game for him. But in these last 2 games, you've seen what the Chiefs can now do if they have a running game against a too high defense. And it makes them nearly unstoppable. Like, this is what we've been hoping for all season. And we just haven't really seen from the running game. And nobody knows why. But best I can tell right now is that they need to get Pacheco and they need to feed him the rock. And it might be a situation where Pacheco, you know, needs more carries to get going.
They've been talking about that. I've seen that, like, basically the more carries he gets, the more effective he becomes.
Yeah, and if you look at his output here, every game that he's had over 10 carries, here's over 10 carries, 5.17 yards per attempt, 5.7, 5.1, and 7.1. Those are his yards per attempts in games where he's had 10-plus carries, and then 8 carries, 5.3. So, you know, feed this guy the rock. And if it takes giving him the ball 15 times a game, then do that. Because we've been messing around with this running back rotation, and you saw the worst of it against Tennessee, which actually spurred action that, you know, we cannot have a running game that's this non-existent. We got to figure it out. And I feel like they're going away from that shotgun, stupid outside run play, even though we did see it once in this game. And of course it got stuffed, I think they're finally figuring out to move away from that and use some inside power and do whatever they got to do with Pacheco, put a fullback in the field and use the running game like that. And if they do that, this offense just reaches the next level. This is what we were all hoping for, you know, coming into this season, coming into last season, you know, finally to have a running game This is what the offense can look like, and we've seen it these last 2 weeks.
You know, the weird thing for me, I don't – look, the Chiefs have had 318 rushing yards over the last 2 weeks against Jacksonville and the Chargers. The Chargers are terrible, like 31st run defense, so no surprise. It's good that they took advantage of it eventually.
Yeah, in that first half, you could tell – I mean, you could almost tell the Chiefs went in, looked at the stat book, and it was, I think the stat was 8 carries for 60 yards for the Chiefs running backs going into half, and it's just like, okay, let's run it some more. And you saw on that first drive of the second half, they just like, it was like 8 straight running plays or something.
Yeah, so it took, they called 8 runs in a row. The last one is the one they got stuffed on, the very stupid call to begin with. 7 straight run plays took them from their own 33 to the Charger 12.
Beautiful.
And I think that like that's the kind of stuff that I know it's probably not what you want to do in the first 15. Just run. But I think that the Chiefs have what it looks like to me right now. They have the right mix on offense between that line and then the bodies that they have in the backfield. And like Clyde is maybe not going to see the field again this year. I don't know how bad that, like if they're going to put him on IR, but high ankle sprain, you know, it's going to be, you know, this like 4 to 6 week thing. And like,
oh, is it?
I would guess that's what they, I thought they said it was high ankle sprain. So, I mean,
wasn't me cheering.
I know Andy said it didn't look good after the game.
Not me, Ryan. Stop accusing me of cheering. I was not cheering.
I have not made any accusations.
Just stop.
Sounds like a guilty conscience to me.
No, just stop.
I mean, but I look at it and it's like we've been asking for at least to just see something from Ronald Jones for like a month. And they tried to claim Eno Benjamin. That didn't happen. I think they tried to claim one other guy. That didn't happen because they're way down the pecking order. Nobody claimed Melvin Gordon. He cleared waivers. I don't know that I want a guy that has 5 fumbles this season and a career of fumbling coming in here.
No way. Go Pacheco. I'm all in on Pacheco.
And I am too. But they're going to have a third active running back, and I'm happy that it's going to be Ronald Jones, I would think. But honestly, if they want to – like, if we think about what Clyde did, he was mostly a receiver. I mean, he has run the ball, goal line type of stuff, like short stuff, and he, you know, breaks it for 10 yards at most.
You mean like this year or what? I mean, like we always wanted him to be a receiver.
As a player this year, but that's what I'm saying. As a player this year, I feel like in the way that he's different from Pacheco moving into that starting role, Clyde probably catches the ball more or is like knows the offense better to be able to do some weird stuff receiving. You know, they put him in motion and whatnot. I mean, I don't know how well he's integrated, but your boy Wayne Gallman is on the practice squad, an exceptional pass blocker, good receiver, tough runner. I mean, he's a more complete player than Ronald Jones. Is he a better runner than Ronald Jones? Probably not, but he certainly brings more to the table. So that is an option still for this team. You know, and I think that they're figuring some things out, but boy, they've got the right mix to be able to be a really balanced team. And, you know, you said, well, if we have to give him 15 carries, so be it. Like, Andy could call 20 Patrick Mahomes under center turnaround handed off plays in a game, and we would still be passing the ball 60-65% of the time. Like, it's not a lot. And so I think that when, you know, we think about establishing the run, they just need to be consistent about using it because sometimes I think he just gets away from it. And I'd say gets away from it in that, like, I don't know how often I'd seen Pacheco get back-to-back carries. It's like, especially, okay, so it's first and 10. Pacheco gets 2 yards, and then they throw it on second and 8. And I'm like, just hand it to him again. Get it down to 3rd and 2. You know, he doesn't do that. And I don't know the tendency stuff and down and distance and, you know, what it says about what you should do. But, like, we saw the set and again, bad Chargers defense. We get it. But the rhythm that your line gets into, the rhythm that your runners get into, like, that shit is real. And so if it's always like, well, we might run on first down or we might run on second and long if there's a penalty or something, like, but it's like they only want to run in certain situations instead of like, well, we're going to fucking run the ball right now because that's what we need to do.
Well, I mean, part of that's because you have the best football player of all time, you know, throwing the ball.
Correct.
So keep doing that.
It's always going to be hard.
But I mean, it's, think about the line being at that game. At one point we had a big run and I saw Andrew Wiley just give a huge fist pump. He gives a huge fist pump and he's waving them on at the sideline, like, keep it coming. Let's keep running because we're going to run all over these bastards. And, you know, that's an offensive lineman's attitude. If they get to run multiple times like that, it's almost more like the line than it is the running back because they get into this mode of like kicking the guy in front of them in the ass instead of like sitting back and protecting. It's very different. And I think almost every single offensive lineman would tell you that they'd rather run block than pass block because they get to be the aggressor. Like that's what they want to do as a 300-pound man. So, you know, it's stuff like that where feed them like, and you don't have to always run. You don't have to just like constantly mix in the run. It's if the defense is fully committed to keeping 2 deep safeties. Okay. If you're going to do that, now we're going to run. Or if Mahomes starts to struggle a little bit, now you start to take some pressure off him by using the running game. Like in this game, like the Titans game, and you know, he figured it out eventually, but it took a while. But it was all on Mahomes' shoulders. Like there was clearly no running game, and they abandoned it in that game as they should because it just was not happening.
Yeah.
But in future situations, that's the time where like, okay, Mahomes is out of rhythm here, and he's not seeing things or he's rushing things. It's usually him not seeing things and not trusting it after having some struggles.
Yeah.
In those situations, then you can lean on the running game. And, you know, hopefully it's better than it was against the Titans. But point taken on the Chargers having an awful run defense and doing it against a real run defense because the Titans, you know, really kicked their ass when it came to that. Although the Buccaneers have a very good run defense and they're able to run on them. So they are at least capable of running on a good run defense.
Well, anything more on the offense before we kind of switch sides of the ball here?
Yes. Yes. One thing. So Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's clearly MVP this season. What more can you say about him? But he has struggled in late game drive situations this season. And that was kind of one of my bigger questions post Tyreek, because, you know, it's when you're in those situations, you go to the guy that you trust. And so I was kind of wondering, I kind of came up in those first couple ones like, man, haven't missed Tyreek yet until right now on this one drive where we need to play right now. Now I wish we had Tyreek Hill. So this season so far, I kind of looked at, you know, late game big drives from him against the Colts. Gets the ball at his own 30 with 18 seconds down 3. That's a very tough situation. 18 seconds, obviously, the 13 seconds joke. But that leads to an interception. We get close, but throws an interception. Raiders, we had a TD drive early in the fourth. 4:21 left in the game. We get the ball at our own 31 up 1, and we eventually punt. That's kind of a big drive situation that you would have liked to see the Chiefs ice the game. Now, a lot of that's the running game, too. I didn't look at the play chart so to know exactly. Bills game, that's the big one. Ball at the own 25, 1:04, down 4. It throws an interception on the second play. Titans, long TD drive, mid-fourth. 1:47 gets the ball back. Game tied at his own 36, and we end up punting. So that was another one where we didn't convert. And now this game, Chargers, own 25-yard line, 1:46, down 4. Obviously, we scored the touchdown. So it was very good to see, like, the one situation where Mahomes has maybe come up a little bit short, you know, tiny little sample size here of, you know, call it the Bills game and the Titans game, you would have liked to see him convert. Colts game would have been a miracle. Raiders game, probably more running game. But in those situations, we haven't necessarily come through so far this year, and it came through in a big way this year, this game, this week.
Yeah, he's He's pretty awesome. So, mind you, I gotta
launch another story here. So Mahomes is getting this last drive. I am like uber confident, which I haven't necessarily been all season in these situations. Like Bill's game wasn't ultra confident we were gonna score on that one. This one, a little liquid courage, a little discombobulated. I was really feeling it. And I was calling my shot out there. I was proud. Mahomes about to do this, MVP. Just letting everyone know what's about to happen. The drive starts. I start looking at the scoreboard. The scoreboard at SoFi says 30-23. And I'm just staring at it. I'm watching a play, and then I'm looking up. I'm like, 30-23, what the fuck? And like, I pride myself on pretty much always knowing the score and situation of football games. Like I'm aware of what's going on, more of the down and distance of the score. And I'm just staring at this like, man, I must be fucked up because I swear it's 27-23. And I'm watching it. Another play goes by. Look back up. Still 30-23. I'm like, I don't even want to like say anything to my brother who I'm sitting next to because I'm like embarrassed. Like, how could I forget the score? I swear we're down 4 and we're driving for the win right now. And this stays up for like 5 minutes. Like, it's just on the board as 30-23. And I'm so confused. Watching this game, I'm like, I'm losing my mind. Finally, my two nephews at their first football game. This kid's 7 years old, Jacobo. He looks at the score and goes, Dad, how come they have 30 points? And my dad goes, well, they scored a touchdown on the last drive, so they have... Wait a second, and then turns to me, I think the score's wrong. And I'm like, dude, I thought that. Like, what is happening? And then like 30 seconds later, they change the score to say 27-23, and all, you know, sanity is restored in my life. As I am just like, I don't know if anyone else is at the game, listen to this pod, but I was like, I had lost my mind looking at the scoreboard and it saying 30-23. It was just a weird, weird moment for me. And it got righted eventually. But the one that solved it, it wasn't me. It wasn't old Uncle Dirk here who's been watching football for 25, 30 years. It was my 7-year-old nephew who corrected the score in his first football game. So props to Kobe.
Nice. Well, it's time to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs defense because I believe the last time that we spoke, I was talking about how excited I was and that this looked like a defense that was on the rise. And you're like, I don't know if I agree with that. I believe that where we have to start is probably with an apology from me. Because while talking about Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Travis Kelce, another key piece of the Kansas City Chiefs roster that I think is probably going to get a contract extension from this franchise. It's Chris Jones who just
Harrison Butker
his 100th game.
Oh.
Yeah, his 335-yard field goals.
Best. He hit a 50-yarder. He's back. He's back.
Chris Jones plays his 100th game against the Chargers on Sunday night. 5 tackles, 4 hits of Justin Herbert, 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. And, you know, he's up to 9 on the year. Had some taken away from him.
Had a bogus one added there.
Did he? Oh, I don't know.
Against Josh on the trip.
Oh, well, that's fine. He's on my team. That's not bogus. You know, I saw our buddy Craig point out that the Chiefs are 4th in the NFL in sacks with 32 through 10 games. They had 31 all of last year. They had 32 all of 2020. So it's working. It is working right now. And I'm telling you.
End of talk.
Mike Dana.
Yeah,
looking fresh. He's a Charger killer. I believe they said he has something like 9 sacks in his career, and like 4 of them are against the Chargers, maybe. But ever since Dana came back, I mean, even certainly getting Frank back this week too, just having another piece in that rotation. I mean, I think Dunlap is growing into the defense too. That front is fun. Now, are they super duper talented outside of Chris Jones? Nah, not particularly. It's a bunch of guys that are there to kind of just be pesky and hopefully earn it a little bit throughout the game. But one of the things that I feel like I'm starting to notice from them over the last couple weeks is it does feel like they're doing a little bit better job up front of being able to give Nick Bolton and Willie Gay the ability to run around and make plays. Because those guys are all over the field, man. B's and G's looking fantastic. And, you know, then I start looking at the secondary and I say, God, they are awfully young back there. But these rookie defensive backs remain pretty steady. They're going to make some mistakes here and there, or they're going to get beat in coverage.
Did you see the snaps from this week? I never saw the snaps. Who are they going with full time?
Oh, you know, I guess I didn't even really think about it in terms of the way that they're rotating guys, but I know Snead missed a little bit of time and then eventually came back. I kind of expected him to end up playing safety, knowing that Thornhill was out. But, I mean, we got a lot of Deion Bush out there.
I love Deion Bush. I love Deion Bush. I do not like Brian Cook. I don't think he's ready right now, personally. But I do love Deion Bush. But who are they choosing between that third corner? I feel like I saw both of them out there.
I mean, both of them played, definitely. I think they were probably just mixing it up. I did see that Snead was actually playing more outside and McDuffie more in the slot, which is cool that they're kind of moving guys around. But, man, I mean, I watched this defense. I mean, Craig was kind of breaking down the numbers to be able to show the difference between guys with sacks from blitzes and guys, you know, in the front four. And I think they're at 60-something percent from their front four, which is pretty normal. I think this defense is rounding into shape. And I know that they're not, you know, they're not an elite group. But for how young they are, and for, in a lot of ways, when we look at it and we see all these different flaws, they're still really pulling their own weight. And I think that they are getting better each week. And I'm having so much fun watching that defense. And it's been a while. It's felt like it's been a while, you know. I mean, defense was a struggle to watch much of 2021. And even at times in 2020, it still felt a little raggedy. And just all the young guys out there and the way that they're playing, it's they're something that I like really look forward to seeing at times. It's like, oh man, you know, Mahomes goes to the sideline, you're going to be disappointed. But like now it's like, I can't wait to see what George does. I'm loving watching all the rookies in the secondary. I love these linebackers, Colin Saunders, your boy, you know, and certainly Chris Jones and others. It's a fun group, man. I look forward to seeing the Chiefs defense on the field.
And so it looks like, so Williams played 66% of the snaps and Watson played 22% of the snaps. So maybe they made their choice there. I'm not sure if that was in four corner look, but it looks like maybe they're rolling with Williams there. And actually played Brian Cook 57% of the snaps and Deion Bush only played 3 snaps. So they were definitely going Brian Cook over Deion Bush there. I think Bush was just kind of in at the end playing 3 safeties in a prevent defense kind of look, I guess.
Okay.
But, you know, 2 huge stops by the defense in this game won the Chiefs the game because the Chargers were in position to take full control at 2 different points. Well, full control against a normal quarterback, not necessarily against Patrick Mahomes, but the Chargers had 2 chances to go up 2 scores in this game. The Chiefs defense got a stop late in the first half within the 5-yard line. That was huge. And then the Chiefs get a field goal early in the second half, and the Chargers get the ball, and they stop them on a 3rd-and-1 to start the second half. And both drives, the Chargers could have gone up 2 scores, really taking control of the game, changed that game. And so the Chiefs came up with 2 big stops there. And I tweeted at that point, those 2 stops just won the Chiefs the game, because that's just enough. I mean, those are huge stops in short yardage situations. And that's all you need to from the defense. I need some water.
I do think that there's a combination of the Chiefs being willing and able to really stand toe-to-toe with a lot of teams in those short yardage situations. They've proven that they're adept at it defensively. I also think that Staley is so in his head. Like, I can't believe, you know, some of the times when he decides to punt, he's just lost it, I think, or never maybe had it to begin with. There's one guy on this Chiefs defense that I did not mention in that I love everybody that plays on the Chiefs defense. And it's more of a coincidence than anything, I guess, but weren't we expecting a little more from Justin Reed? Is it okay to have a Justin Reed conversation? Like, who, if you were thinking about like safeties of the Chiefs past and like what contribution they bring to the team, like, I don't know who to compare him to. He's not causing turnovers. He's not making big hits. He's not making
big tackles. That's a few big tackles this year.
A couple, you know, but like, I just don't. He doesn't stand out ever, which I think is fine. But like, this is the guy that they ostensibly brought in to kind of be Tyrann Mathieu a little bit. Maybe that's in terms of the leadership role, or he's a little more diplomatic, certainly. But like, I just don't. Has he made a play this year? Is there like a Justin Reed moment? I remember people saying he like took a big hit from one running back and just like, you know, well, Tyrann wouldn't have stood in front of that guy and like let the freight train come down the tracks. They would have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like, I don't know what to say about Justin Reed. I'd say he's a little underwhelming, maybe.
I got a counter. Remember how many problems the Chiefs were having lining up on defense over the last, was that just last year? Uh-huh. Maybe in 2020, but just like all these problems where they wouldn't get lined up on time, their alignment was off, they're moving around, is like the ball is getting snapped, and it's just like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, we've had Spags for 4 or 5 years now. Like, how are we having all these problems lining up? I haven't noticed that at all this season. And so maybe,
and it's Justin Reed, Bolton doing that for the first time. I mean, obviously we're having a Justin Reed conversation, but Bolton is the green dot guy, right?
Well, so he's getting the play, but I think a safety has to make sure, he's at the back, making sure everybody's lined up properly. Like, yeah, every receiver is getting covered.
Got a better view, like, right? A little further back, getting the widescreen view.
But, you know, his calling card, it should be his smarts. Stanford guy, obviously. So he's smart, obviously.
Watching White Lotus?
No, I have not. Oh, I have not.
But I'm excited. Is on there, graduated from Stanford.
Ah, nice. There you go.
It's been good.
So, I mean, that might be his calling card. Maybe he's smart and getting people lined up. But, I mean, I think the underwhelming card is totally fair. Safety's kind of weird because, you know, in the secondary, you know, playing corner, you want them to go unnoticed. Like, you don't want to see Trent McDuffie on the screen all game. That means he's doing his job and doing it damn well. Safety is kind of, you know, he's in coverage too, so you don't necessarily want to see him that much, but you also want to see him making plays because safety's kind of come up and make hits and, you know, maybe make a play over the top, something like that, game-saving tackle, shoestring tackle, things like that. And you're not necessarily seeing those. So it's kind of weird to judge safety from like the normal game view. You'd have to be looking like specifically at Justin Reed. Like, I'd love to see one of these film guys do a study on Justin Reed and just, is he doing his job every single play? And maybe he is, and maybe he isn't, but it's not showing when it comes to making plays.
Yeah, I mean, he's, and that's the thing, you know, the Chiefs getting two turnovers, forcing two, I suppose, against the Chargers is a good sign, because they've just been so poor at taking the ball away. And, you know, I look at it and it's like, okay, well, how many plays has Juan Thornhill made this year? How many plays has Justin Reed made this year? How many plays has Brian Cook made this year? And I don't know if any of them are good. You know, they're fine. I don't think that any of them are necessarily hurting us. But I am certainly way much more impressed and excited about the three rookie corners. And then Snead is like, he does both, you know. It's like he makes the safeties better. He makes the corners better. He's just one of our best defensive players, and I absolutely love him.
Yeah, it's almost like him more in that Badger role than it is Reed.
Oh, yeah, 100% as far as, like, on the field. And look, we had talked about the fact that there was – it's not like you're going to have one guy that can just be Tyron, right? It might have to be a bunch of different things that Tyron did get absorbed – you know, by multiple players. I do think that if there is there's a something missing on this defense right now, the ability to turn teams over, to force turnovers, whether that's because you're forcing quarterbacks into bad throws or you've just got guys that are really good at playing the ball in the air, that's something that they're missing. And I do think it's something that, like, they probably recognize to where, you know, depending on where they're picking or where they want to allocate their resources in the offseason, they might be looking for that deep safety, like that guy that Thornhill was supposed to be, and letting him walk. We'll see. Beyond that, we did get to see, while you were out of town, Carlos Dunlap getting his 100th sack. Just a really cool milestone, and it's great to be able to have him here. I feel like he's starting to come on a little bit. I mean, don't look now. I believe he has 5 sacks on the season.
He had the one game where he was looking real nice. Either the Titans or Jags, I can't remember which, but one of those. It was like, all right, Dunlap. But he's been solid all season. I think the you know, maybe a comparison to Melvin Ingram last year. I think he's probably a notch below what Melvin Ingram was providing last year, but also less opportunity than Melvin Ingram had. But I do think those comparisons
continuing to play very, very well in Miami. I've heard Mina Kimes mention him like 3 different times this season.
I do think those comparisons are fair between those two. And really, I mean, if you have Dana coming on, you got Dunlap, Dana, George, Frank. That's a pretty damn good rotation at defensive end. Especially if you can just keep them rotating all game and keep them all fresh, you know, not any one of them is like a total game changer, but if you got fresh legs in the fourth quarter, maybe that's where you start to see the difference and they start winning with depth instead of just like the one dominant player on the outside.
And man, it's just, God, it stinks that they don't have Wharton. I mean, just a guy that was able to like make things happen quickly.
Is he done?
Yeah, I would expect so. So that's a tough loss, because I think he would certainly strengthen what they're doing on the interior. I wanted to ask you. You said about Colin Saunders. You are quite the Colin Saunders fan, it seems like, this year.
Put him in safety.
Built like a warthog.
No. He's built like a hedgehog.
Hedgehog. Okay.
Wharton is the warthog. We got the warthog and the hedgehog. If only we could get both of them healthy.
Wharton.
That was spurred because I was actually holding a hedgehog earlier that day. Mm. And I was like, look at little Colin Saunders in my hands. Isn't he cute?
I heard somebody in the ether somewhere called him Kung Fu Panda. And it's amazing. It's so perfect when I think about Poe, and just the, like, all the things that he's able to do. And I love Kung Fu Panda. Big fan of the movie and the nickname.
But he's just so short and stout. He's good. I love Colin Sanders. I love it. He's active. He's into the game. He's passionate. Dude, he's fucking so quick. I can't believe how quick he is in short spaces. I'd love to see him at safety. Put him at safety. I bet he'll make plays.
I could see it. I do want to, before we do Who's Your Jefe, I do want to, at the very least, just acknowledge that I don't have the number in front of me. If use your Twitter search or something, I'm sure you can find it. I believe that Chris Jones, at around half of his sacks are like in the fourth quarter. He's definitely making plays when it matters. And I also think that he recognizes that he's had trouble finishing plays. And that Burrow thing, you talked about the motivation that he's had for that. And I believe that it was in the fourth quarter, when he got that sack on Trevor Lawrence. And I feel like I saw him chase down a running back on a play and a quarterback on a play where it's like Chris Jones is like all over toward the sideline. Like,
yeah,
there's something happening with him this year. And I do think that he's trying to get better, push himself to find those areas of his game where he can improve. And he's been so much better against the run this year. Chris Jones really, really stepping it up. My Jefe.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Oh, your Jefe. Your Jefe.
My Jefe. You know,
it's not Chris Jones. It's not Chris Jones?
No, it's not.
Or it is Chris Jones.
That was my transition. That was not a transition. I just said Chris Jones is having a great year. My Jefe is not Chris Jones.
Let's put a commercial break in between there.
Yeah. My Jefe. I had a really tough time. Who's my Jefe? And here's what I came up with. It's kind of a cop out, but it's fair. Anyway, my Jefe for this week is Brett Veach, because I look at the depth that was required to step in on both sides of the ball. The way that they have just kind of kept it moving. And, you know, when you are without, I guess at this point, your top three receivers, I don't know how you fit Tony in there. It's tough to measure it coming off that Jags game. You know, MVS has been a starter all year, so it is what it is. But when you're without Juju and McColl and Tony, and guys like Justin Watson, Jody Fortson, Noah Gray, Sky Moore.
Noah.
I mean, all of these guys are acquired by Brett Veach. Some of them undrafted guys, some of them late round draft picks. And you know, Deion Bush having to be in there for a few snaps, and the way that they've had to use guys like Malik Herring and Darius Harris, you know.
Herring looks good, and I didn't even throw him in that defensive end rotation. He'd be the fifth DN, and he's been made inactive, but he's showing some flashes this year too.
I just feel like this team is very deep in ways that it hasn't been in the past, certainly at receiver. Yeah, I mean, look, when you have a game like that between Andy, Pat, Travis, and Chris Jones, you know, it's easy to focus on those guys. But I was just so impressed with the way that guys that aren't normally called upon went out and got the job done. And maybe that's just Pat distributing the ball and whatever. But, like, these guys made some plays. And ultimately, really, the only mistake, I think, that I remember among a lot of those guys is either Pacheco's fucking catching the kickoff inbounds, was so stupid.
I was taking a piss during that, so I didn't see it, for the record. So still the man in my books.
That one, you know, just a total rookie move. And then Noah Gray just not quite being able to come down with that catch, but seemed like a good play by the defender.
I don't remember that one.
Second and something, and then we ended up having the long third down conversion on the next play. It was kind of a downfield, and he went up to get it, and the defender got it out of there. But, you know, like, I and Pacheco running for 100 yards, and he's a seventh-round draft pick. Like, I just
– Well, quit stealing all my damn Jefes.
Sorry, I'm just looking at – it's like Brett Veach is just – God, man, he's fantastic. I love Brett Veach. I love him. I love all the Chiefs. I'm thankful. I am thankful. Brett Veach, well, my Jefe, along with all the guys on the roster that I named, because he acquired most of them.
Well, my Jefe has absolutely nothing to do with Brett Veach because he was drafted by John Dorsey. My Jefe is Patrick Mahomes. I bet Veach wish he had something to do with that, but he had nothing to do with it. No, I can't. I love you, Veach. But Patrick Mahomes, my Jefe this week. There's some other choices out there, but when you're attending a game, I don't get to attend many games anymore. Just one a year, last couple of years. But that feeling with a few Pacificos in me and the Chargers scoring with a minute 45 and me looking around at all the excited Chargers fans and just the feeling inside that this thing's about to change. The man is about to take over. He's about to announce his presence, and I am in attendance. I get to watch this. I am lucky enough to have this feeling, to get to watch this, and it's because of one man. It's because of Patrick Mahomes. That's the name I'm yelling. That's the feeling I have inside. And the ability to have that, it's special, man. It's special to give up a crushing touchdown with under 2 minutes left against your rival, opens the division race back up. It could have been crushing, and I never faded. I didn't sweat one second. Just, all right, look at all that time. I am excited to get to watch this, and he is going to make it happen. And boy, did he, in fantastic fashion. And I loved every second of it. And it's just, God bless him. God bless Patrick Mahomes. And it was beautiful to watch. I love it. I loved every second of it. I loved it. I love that man.
I don't know if it was like a jab. I don't think it was meant to be. He was just kind of telling it. Andy Reid, they had asked him about, you know, pretty impressive final drive, whatever. And he made the comment. He's like, well, you know, when you've done it in 13 seconds, you know, a minute feels like eternity. And I'm just like, they're so good.
Shout out to Andy Reid real quick. Sorry. Calling that timeout late in the game, you know, Andy's bugaboo throughout his career is poor clock management. I think there's at least a handful of coaches, maybe half the league, would not have called a timeout in that situation. It's, you know, the Chargers had a running clock. It's like a minute 50 or whatever before their game-winning touchdown. But Andy's smart enough to call that timeout now. Younger Andy, I'm not sure. Coaches across the league, I'm not sure. But calling that timeout instead of letting it go down to a minute 15, minute 10, and now you're in much bigger trouble and saving that timeout for no reason. You know, coaches across the board have gotten smarter when it comes to that. But Andy Reid calling the timeout when it mattered most, very, very smart.
So I got one last thing. And it's gonna take some creativity from your brain, Dirk. I know that you're still a little lagged here. But when I do my notes for this, a lot of times I use the like dictation software that comes on my little iPhone. It's like an iPhone 8, right? So I get that it might not be the best.
Humble brag.
But I use the dictation. And every time that I say the word offense, which with this team, pretty frequently, it thinks that I'm saying office. And so I constantly get the Kansas City Chiefs office. And in order to correct it, what I have now had to try to train my mouth to say is the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And so I've been wondering about what the Kansas City Chiefs offense would be. And then I was like, well, we do kind of have some dark history. But what do I do here? The Kansas City Chiefs offense. How can I train myself to remember that I have to say it that way, or I'm always going to have to go back and erase that word, or just come across it in my notes randomly? The Kansas City Chiefs office.
Front office. With your jefe. With your jefe, Brett Veach.
Yeah. The Kansas City Chiefs offense. I don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like a mystery. Something that John...
So what the hell you need my help with?
Oh, I don't know. I mostly just wanted to say that I have to say the Kansas City Chiefs offense.
Glad I could help. Yep. Glad my creativity came in.
Really important to be able to talk that out with you. These are the things that I've been thinking about while you were in Tokyo.
Mm.
Do you want to chat about Tokyo? You were just dropping
Tears
and people were like, oh my God, he's across the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. Tokyo, amazing.
How long's your flight? Do they have you change planes or anything in Hawaii?
No, direct flight to Tokyo, 12 hours. The time difference is staggering. But what I've learned in my travels is that going west is pretty easy because you just have to stay up a little late and you'll be fine. But traveling east, coming back home, is brutal, or going to Europe is brutal. Just destroys your body. I'm just falling asleep randomly every 6 hours here. But yeah, so you leave on Monday morning, get there on Tuesday evening. And I get dropped off at the busiest crosswalk in the world. That's where our hotel is.
Oh, that's where more than Times Square, eh?
Oh yeah. I think. Yes. Times Square. I don't know if they have like a crosswalk like that across the street. It's more like a pedestrian kind of area. But I mean, this is like thousands of people with going 11 different directions kind of thing. It's just if you start paying attention to like Japanese stuff on TV that they show, they'll show this crosswalk typically.
Yeah.
But that's where our hotel was. That's where we walk out of the subway station and immediately introduced to that. And it's just like, oh my God, whoa, just thrown into chaos. Outside of that, very little trouble. Japan is clean, quiet.
It's the biggest city in the world and it's quiet.
It's quiet. I mean, especially in a smaller city, but like nobody's phone is playing sounds. Nobody's talking on the phone. That's considered very disrespectful. Everybody speaks quietly. Like, I'm a guy that's kind of, for lack of a better word, triggered by unnecessarily loud noises.
Mm-hmm.
So perfect place for me because I can just exist in quiet and solitude out there, especially when you go to like Kyoto, which is a much smaller city, kind of old school Japan. Just fantastic. Just serenity all around you. Coming back to USA, first thing you notice is like, God damn, it's fucking loud, especially when you get dropped off at LAX. You're thrown under to the wolves out there. It's just like my brain hurt. Still hasn't recovered. But everything. Oh, gotta talk about the bathrooms. You know, we could focus on the food and the fancy food that I ate. It's all fantastic, but I'm a man of the common folk, and we need to talk about the bathroom. Bidets are amazing. It's life-changing. Since coming back, I've had major problems with my a-hole. It's been dry. It's been chapped. I've got a doctor visit on the way. And I need to get a bidet, folks. I need to get a bidet. But they have, dude, in public, you can hit a button.
Do you actually have a doctor's appointment?
No.
I was like, oh my God, what happened? Does it moisturize for you? Or is this a toilet paper remark?
So in public, they have a button you can hit that makes sound. It makes like nature sounds, so you can poop in peace, which is always very important.
In public?
In public,
that's
they
amazing.
Have heated the toilet machine. Seats. Heated toilet seats in public. Their public facilities are remarkable. You would not believe how clean they were compared to, like, you know, going to a public bathroom around here. It's like,
nope.
Night and day doesn't even cover the difference between the two. I was pumped to go take a poo in public in Japan. One of the greater pleasures. Not to mention the shower. They all have nice overhead showers, separate knobs for power and temperature. And not to mention the onsen, which is the public bathhouses within most of the hotels, where you can go sit with many other naked Japanese men in peace in a large, warm bath. Doesn't get any better than that in my books. So the bathroom situation, it's like a 10 to a 1.5. Like, America's just got to figure out this bathroom situation. We're all doing it wrong. So we could learn a thing or two there. Other than that, I don't know what else you want to know. The food was incredible. I know you care about the food. Not nearly as expensive as you think. People say Japan's expensive. We went, like, shopping all the time. It was like Mexico. Just buying shit all over because it's fucking cheap. We went to a couple fancy restaurants. Other than that, you're paying way less than I would here in California for meals. Just remarkably cheap, especially when it comes to its reputation. And you don't find a bad meal anywhere you go. The hotel. I never eat in a hotel on vacation because it's usually just like, I don't know, why would I rather go out and eat at a place that I care about? And I assume it's not good at most hotels. These hotels are like gourmet fucking dinners, gourmet breakfast, whenever you go. Just here's an 8-course meal for 20, 25 bucks. Just like, fuck yeah, let's go.
One of the things that I've heard that's like very, very different from the States is the way that they do breakfast. That breakfast, particularly in Japan, but really even breakfast like in Europe, that American breakfast kind of sucks compared to what we end up seeing. So, like, what was breakfast like? Were you trying to find like pancakes and eggs and like biscuits and gravy? Or like, is it like, no, this is totally, they don't even have things like that? Because that's the impression I've gotten, is like most of the staples for us are not staples elsewhere.
I mean, I'm sure you could find it, but no, that's not the common thing. I mean, most breakfasts that they would offer, I mean, I got something called an all-in salad, and it probably had 15 different things on the plate. And it's just like,
oh, I think
sausage, some really fish, some warm pumpkin soup, all these veggies. The breakfast was incredible. So yeah, I'm sure you could find American stuff like that. We weren't looking for it whatsoever.
That's crazy that you're having like a plate of vegetables and a soup and stuff at breakfast, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, very unorthodox.
Yes. Yeah. That breakfast I got was insane. I'm not usually like, I don't like wake up and pound food. So I usually save until lunch out there. But also like just going to like the gas station, getting like a pastry. Like, here's this. I had like this melon pastry with cantaloupe filling kind of thing. It was one of the best things I've ever eaten, man. It's just at a 7-Eleven. Like every time I go to 7-Eleven, just looking for pastries or different kind of snacks, they're all just fucking delicious. Just fucking delicious. It makes me wonder if they come to America and eat the stuff that we have and they think that's delicious. Like, look at this
7-Eleven.
Six pack of donuts. I'm going to eat the shit out of this. And they probably think it's delicious. I think. I don't know. But everything I got over there was good.
That's cool. All right, man. Well, the Chiefs play the Rams on Sunday at 3:25. Not exactly the matchup everybody thought that they were getting. I believe the Chiefs are potentially up to 2-touchdown favorite now-ish.
It will be an interesting preview of future Chargers coach Sean McVay versus Andy Reid and the Chiefs.
Oh, you think he's just going to – I thought the Chargers were going to hire Sean Payton, and then it would be the Sean Show in L.A.
They can get both.
Anytime someone says Sean, they're going to be like, which one? That would be my guess.
It's just an open check written. They have Sean written out, but not the last name filled out yet.
Are they both scenes? S-S-E-A-N?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think
so. Yeah. All right.
It works. The joke works.
Well, folks,
we're not going to talk World Cup.
Oh, no, not on this show. It's fine. No, nobody needs to hear about that. I'm not going to force the World Cup on you guys anymore.
20 seconds. I could not believe how good they looked in the first half and how bad they looked in the second half. The stark difference between the two was unbelievable.
Yeah, Wales adjusted and Berhalter shat the bed. This has been Amateur Hour, folks. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his Dirkness. The Chiefs are awesome. They're 8-2 and hopefully getting a little healthier and going to rack up a ninth win on Sunday.
In charge of scheduling? Berhalter, I think.
Greg Berhalter.
Berhalter. I told that fuck 1,000 times.
You don't roll on Chavez.
Who the best?
Go join.